Yes, during most of that period, that is, by 54, when I was assigned to be executive director of the Faculty of Physical Sciences, I still managed to keep my laboratory, and we did what we could. I mean, I certainly did most work, but I did get my fingers on some of it. But what we were seeing, Jack, was an expansion through the whole domain of technology and science of the fundamentals of molecular and atomic properties, which were the working ground of chemistry for many years, and the physics, particularly part of physics, as it came along. So that, plus the fact that materials have the substances that people had to build things with, were more and more used, virtual and met demand. That just led to a natural interaction with the rest of the business with our laboratory. Of course, I had always been very much interested in signaling systems. The original work with mice was a kind of signaling system that could send microwaves, electromagnetic waves, through matter and see what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we were sending them over a network and from New York, San Francisco, and it was still quite a matter to see what happened to them.
How did during those 2 years, from 51 to 54, when you were assistant director of the chemical laboratory, how did Burns was still director, wasn't he?
Yes.
What kind of style did he have in leading the lab?
He was very good, you see. He recognized, as we said earlier, how these scientific and technical fields were converging. He had encouraged Wooten, who was another one of our associates in the lab, to set up a special group for electronics, both tubes and cathodes and semiconductors. He had recognized the excitement and new opportunities of polymers. He had played a part in the discovery transistor and the materials we needed there. So he was just gung-ho for progress and for having matter understood as it was used. He also, of course, had himself a strong interest and played an important part in stabilization, corrosion containment, in the endurance of this plant. This plant was growing in billions and billions of dollars during that period, you see, and we were borrowing furiously to finance it. Well, it would be very important to have it last. And Burns was very strong on that. 4 years was a minimal span, regarded by most of industry as either a third or unacceptable, because they wanted some obsolescence as well as other things. And we wanted our stuff to last, which it has, of course.
What sort of meeting do you think you took on as assistant director? You must have had to worry more about budgets and authorizations and all that sort of thing.
Well, you've seen the case right up. That's what we produced. But it was lots of fun as it's been throughout the whole period, because in the tradition of the system and the way we do now, it's for the management to know something about what it's doing, in other words, to know something advanced in engineering in that field, something in bibliography and information handling in your fields, and professional links, you see. So everybody knew something. We don't go to the business school principle that you just switch people around every few days in order to get practice. They become abstract managers, but rather that you really have to know the content. So we spent a lot of time on that. And I spent a lot of time on the design of programs and strategies for new work. Photonics is one of the They just have credit, computers were another part. We always regard computers as very good byproducts of communications and of engineering, and we needed them. We wrote 1956, I guess, engineer Grant Chancellor, analysis of present and future of computers, there wasn't much of a past. Although we did also work with Phillips, who made the first one. And so it was very natural to cooperate with the large numbers of people then who were doing the new work and trying to organize it.
Yeah, in 54, when you came to the research in the physical sciences, was that that was when Burns retired after, wasn't it?
Yes.
So was there a reorganization so that the physician director, the chemical laboratory, just didn't exist anymore, and that was, you took over those responsibilities?
Yes. Well, no, the chemical laboratory kept on existing a lot, but
I mean, as a separate organization.
Well, it was still a separate organization, it still is. But by what happened there, you're right about the organization, in that we took that as an occasion for growth and for recognizing what Burns and Williams and the others had thought of so well, and that was that there ought to be a volume of chemistry and materials work so that virtually every part of the laboratory could call on it. And so one of the first things we did was to establish a new laboratory of metals and ceramics, which Schumacher had, which he greatly wanted all of his years. But we wanted to recognize that and to expand it. Then we had the chemical laboratory. Pretty soon, Wooten had done work on in this direction. We had a laboratory of chemical physics. Mm-hmm. And so that's grew out of the chemical laboratory.
And then, were these things that you instituted during that year that you were director of the station physical science?
Yeah, those things arose during that year of physical sciences.
And then a year later, you became vice president of the church, and Chris went upstairs to be president. And there's so many things to talk about during the years that you were vice president of the church. But I wanted to just start off by asking if you've already talked about how you began to implement this vision of a unified material science with chemistry at the core along with a wide field. And clearly by 1955 you were in a position to really do something about it. Not that you hadn't been able to do things before, but you were now in a position to really organize something.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could talk a bit about the sort of style that you tried to bring to the lab, or the tone you tried to set in the lab when you became vice president for the first.
We were encouraged in that change, in that job, to be very basic in expecting the new science, which was moving pretty fast then, not only solid state, a lot of it was started here, but it was quantum electrodynamics, it was the whole range of synthetic chemistry, it was the range of physics that dealt with collective phenomena, physical mechanics. It was the mathematics that dealt with quality assurance statistics, physical design of experiments, the fundamental measurement and expression of signals and of encoding. It was the communications science of organism, of the behavior features, which we didn't quite get to the limit, which we had a background on from Fletcher's work. It was acoustics, which we made into a new laboratory at that point. It was the fact that all those fundamentals were coming together in disciplines of understanding that we really hadn't exploded very heavily before. Computers were shaping up as one of the ways you could do it. the exploitation was enormously enhanced because we'd be able to handle quantities of data we knew already. We had these machines which were humaned by computers. You wouldn't say manned. And did you all know that computers were one of the great resources of the Bell Laboratories at that stage? We had a bunch of these folks who were just admirable. This was before IBM or we or anybody had adequate mainframes. But we had manual systems that were fast, and we did mathematics research and computing way beyond anybody in the world thought was possible by having these folks do it. And they became very expert indeed, and they really knew what programming was about. Anyway, this was the atmosphere in which we proceeded the reorganizing and expanding the research program.
Before we started the tape today, we were talking about the problem of in just a few years, from between 51 and 55, you've gone from worrying mainly about polymer research and not burning, but paying attention to and conducting polymer research with the group that you had right after the war, to being responsible for all the research activities of Bell Labs. But it must have been a daunting task to keep on top of everything, to have a sense of what was going on.
I think they were so nervous that I would mess up what I was doing, that I would rather get my attention somewhere else. But whatever it was, we did find it very challenging and exciting because, for one thing, the work in chemistry and materials and solids that we've been talking about put one in touch with a great variety of people in other fields. The engineers, the physics folks, the acoustics people, mathematics. We haven't got to it this stage, but we'll get sometime perhaps to applications we had of Mason's work and the mathematics work in the original dynamics of single polymer chains, which is grown to be a very lively field. But we had the privilege of doing it first work in that. Well, these are simply examples, but we got to know these people very well, and we encouraged our first and others of our colleagues to expand that. And so it was really fairly natural and easy to get acquainted and to get sympathetic response to the new things that we wanted to do. We were lucky in that at the same time as the discovery of the transistor, Shannon and his focus in mathematics with Bode's encouragement had discovered communication theory. I've lost space in many forms, but one of the times I lost space was on the 10th anniversary of the transistor. We had a big event here in 1958 or so, and we were speaking in the auditorium, and they were saying how this would endure in history forever. And I said, yes, and after it's forgotten in a few thousand years, communication theory will still be with us, which have been not mentioned in the transistor era, just by chance. But that is was a very fundamental thing. Now, that said, that the future of telephony and of telecommunications and of computers should be digitally based, and should be based on on and off bi-state phenomena of matter of some kind. I mean, could be relay, as Philip had recognized long before, but it also could be a junction device, a transistor, a flash of light from something which we later embedded in the laser, and so on. Well, this was very interesting to one because we've known from the work of dielectrics and also later work of magnetics that bi-states were something you could achieve in a lot of interesting ways. It started out in dielectrics because a dipole either points one way or the other. It's either plus or minus. A magnetic pole would do the same thing. Charges, talk about electrets and brilliant polymers, where either a positive charge is either there or it's not there. Or you can have a positive charge and a negative charge, as you with no farewell from the usual iron era. And this fits, you see, in a way that nobody had been lucky enough to encounter before, because communications had been a fairly complicated deal, and analog signals were, well, really complicated. Telegraphy was supposed to be good, digital, but nobody thought of it in terms of very large volumes of very high-speed reactions. And so we were lucky in coming at a time when digital processes were getting dimly but clearly in view, by states of matter and the control of charges was solid, was getting clearly in view, and blown together. And that's the history of the information age.
Well, those are two exciting times at the lab, but with all these exciting developments, did you institute new systems for making sure that information was shared widely throughout the lab, that people could keep in touch? Or you mentioned earlier that you would have bank scientists come in and report to the council as a way of increasing the presence of up and down the hierarchy. I wonder if you could just talk about some of that. I mean, after all, it's an organization of, you said, 26,000 people about
And when we did work at these things, there was a steady increase in the number of seminars, exchanges of information, a very particularly a strong growth in the already well-established tradition of MMs, which are absolutely central and members of that. We encouraged the formation of the Mercury system, which brought this to people's attention, you see. That kind of thing made people feel responsible to each other, at least involved in each other's work to a remarkable degree. We got a lot more academic activity when we were talking about non-consultants and no links there. Of course, we changed that drastically. We made our staff feel that they were part of the total national community, and with academic consultants and participants, colleagues, were very much in style. Many of them came, worked, prepared here during summer and other times. We then encouraged and arranged for our staff people to spend time at the universities. This has changed, this happened in the 50s in a very dramatic way. We had dozens of them that did that. That made them feel that they were exchanging views and information with a larger community, and I think it made our internal community much more labile. There were a lot of other techniques. We introduced during this period the calendars, which told what these little discussion groups were doing, and you've seen these now, these green ones. This was a fellow that we referred to in connection with Parliament Tavern, was a special sponsor of that. You know, I worked out some ways to get back to every part of the research department represented there, and now it's more or less a laboratory-wide situation. We joined with the regional laboratories much more closely. This is a thing that Dr. Kelly had invented, and we got chemists to be resident in some of those, physicists to be visitors and partly residents in those laboratories in Ohio and Massachusetts and Illinois. So there were all these factors which made the community.
You mentioned the systems of discussion groups and seminars that reminded me of something that I wanted to ask. I've been looking at another context of the history of Eastern Kodak research lab, and one of the first things that Kenneth Mead did that became a tradition at the Kodak Lab was to set up conferences in various specific research areas so that they would have a coupler's conference on diodes and couplers and the use of color photography, and that that conference has been in existence for a couple of decades or even more. And it sounds very similar to the sort of thing that you were describing in the mid-50s. Did you call up your colleagues at other companies? Did you get together with them to talk about ways of encouraging information flow, of organizing research? Did you begin to spend time?
Well, in some other way. Now, we had been one of the founders, Jewett was one of the founders, Anna Whitney from the EU, of a thing called the Directors of Industrial Research, which you know about, and it was a small, very informal group. Unfortunately, it's somewhat larger now, and not so informal. They did a good deal of that. I became a member of that, 54, I guess, or so. Baum had been a member. We did do that. The Industrial Research Institute was beginning to flourish at that point, much larger. Mm-hmm. We spent time at that consistently and seriously. We participated in their various academic conferences on how to organize, what to do, which we'll do to some extent. It's interesting, Jeff, that our people now, for their own good reasons, I think, and I think this is true in other laboratories too, don't seem to be as active in some of those very large arenas of organization management as they used to be. But we did spend a lot of time in those years at it. Not sure that we learned anything very startling or very surprising.
Of course, the laboratories had a unique kind of organizational context.
Well, the vertical integration was a great help. We had links with our factories and links with our users, and these were things that many of our colleagues just didn't have, and we won't have either if we don't look out. Mm-hmm. We don't have links with our users the way we used to. That was a tremendous value.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have lunch, you have to have a cup.
I'm thinking there are a few. You're talking to three other
people. I just gave you a little nap.
But before we close, I'd like to ask you if there's something that I should have asked you today, something that you really feel that I've missed.
I think you've covered these things well. Especially just the thing that may come into some more discussion at some stage would be more substance of how chemistry has grown in this period and how I think there have been interactions of this arena that you've been discussing and that you are talking about here with the whole chemical community, the outside chemical community. I think you could talk more about that. Would really be related to your broad talk.
I'd be delighted to come back again and
have
another show.
And in that respect, by the way, I'll produce some artifacts, if I would amuse you. Original polymers, blocks of stuff, they're kind of interesting, and you might even want some of them, but at least they illustrate the point.
I think we'll also talk a little bit more about the government.
You probably got some that are embodied in something useful, too, but mine might be different. Chunks, but they might be interesting to you as well. So we look forward to that. Marcy has been very tolerant of emphasis on special chemical aspects or other links that you want to be pursuing, of course. And we've got some of those. It's got a fascinating base with physics and a few other fields, but there are other fields, and behavioral work, for example, a little bit on acoustics and so on, but these are very new stages of Bell Labs records. There haven't been anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be very fruitful.
Well, thanks again for
Thank you.
Your time and for